I thanked the entity for letting me know of its presence, and asked it to put the thought of its name into Elsie's mind, and she said the name Ephraim came. After this, however, there were very few verbalized answers to my questions. Almost all were finger answers which she reported to me. It became a game of 20 questions several times over. In this way, however, we learned that the entity, Ephraim, was a 40-year-old mentally retarded man full of terrible fear. There was something about a wolf, no, maybe not a wolf but a big dog. It was coming, it was threatening and growling, it was leaping. Ephraim tried to protect his head with his arm, and the dog's teeth sank into the arm. Eventually the dog managed to reach Ephraim's throat, and in a panic of pain and suffocation Ephraim died. He continued to experience the fear and the mental dullness of his earth life and brought them into Elsie when he found and entered her. Undoubtedly he sought someone like her because he felt he would be safe in a gentle person who cared for children feeling, as he did, like a hurt, frightened child himself. I followed the usual formula over the telephone, and Ephraim finally saw some light. He even saw someone coming toward him, a kind-looking man, but the man's face began to change and become blank and then even rather unfriendly. With my limited knowledge at that time, I did not know how to ascertain for sure whether this was another lost soul looking for help or actually a guide for Ephraim. Therefore, at a later session with a friend as channel, I checked up on poor Ephraim and learned that he had gone home safely. Elsie and I decided that he had so often seen friendly faces change into cold faces on sensing his mental imitations that, but forgiveness was not quite complete, for she added, "Sometimes I still feel hate." She seemed to wander off and no longer responded to my voice. In Cheryl there was also little Petey, almost 4, who had fallen over a log as he played with his dog and had drowned in a creek. When I asked for a guide, his granddad came for him. Petey called his dog and could hear Bingo barking but could not see him. Probably the dog was still in a living body but was aware of Petey's call. Petey asked me to thank the nice lady who had given him the warm, quiet place that he had found after seeing his body in the water. A third entity in Cheryl was the soul of a femme that had miscarried. It told us that spiritual counselors had insisted before its conception that it needed to come back to the earth plane for more experience and learning. I thought I wanted to be born but I didn't, so I wanted to go back but I didn't make it back, to the spiritual plane. You mean that you felt your first decision was a mistake? Yes, a mistake, my mistake and their mistake, too. The infant soul said that no one killed its body, I just wanted to go back. It was 7 months along when the child's soul left it. The baby's body died, and it was just a body. I left. Dot. The lady died. Charlene as channel, feeling the baby's feelings and knowing its thoughts, and I as facilitator, both had the distinct impression that this little soul did need more earth experience to tone down its flippant don't care attitude and its casual way of making decisions that it shortly changed its mind about. After typing out this session and sending it to my friend in Santa Fe, I received back some weeks later a note, "I've thought of you so often and all you did for us and my friend Cheryl. She's much improved and was grateful for your 102 prayers and your friends, too." The word much was underlined with a dark sweep. Like this session with Charlene was for a doctor friend of mine, Jack, who had an alcohol problem along with a chronic depressive attitude toward nearly everything in his life. He had helped himself to a degree with self-hypnosis but could not overcome those two main problems. He willingly acquiesced when I asked him on the phone if he wanted us to see if a remote releasement would help. Several entities had already been released with Jack himself on the long-distance telephone. Charlene placed herself in hypnosis, and I asked for the strongest entity in Jack to come and tell us his name. "My name is Fred," came the answer very deliberately. He said he was old, aged 45, but felt old both physically and emotionally. He had drunk alcohol since his teens. Not especially unhappy but always felt sad. Thought that if he drank he would have fun, a lot of fun, but I always felt sad. Sometimes drank too much. People said, There's nothing more disgusting than a drunk that cries. Asked if his parents had been happy together, he said they hadn't acted so. Asked if they loved him, he said, I always wondered. He could recall no time his parents showed him affection since he was little and cute. I'd sing. People thought I was cute. On the last day of his life he had about decided to do something about the drinking. I was pretty sober, had told a friend I'd go to an AA meeting with him. It was really funny, really funny. I started walking out to meet my friend 103, and saw a car coming. The light changed. I didn't stop and the car hit me. You know what was so funny? The fellow driving the car was drunk. Sort of poetic justice. I never killed anybody, but I never made anybody happy either. Nobody ever made me happy, either. Fred looked at his injured body. It doesn't look like it could go to any meeting. The head is all squashed, the brain. It's had it. But he went in spirit to the meeting, was interested in some of the things said and asked questions, which were ignored. Nobody listened. I thought that nobody cared about me. I explained, but they didn't know you were there. They did care about you. Find your friend. Contact his mind. What is he thinking about you? Fred grimaced and then relayed the thought. Well, we'll never know whether Fred would have made it or not. Maybe he wouldn't, I might have. Nobody seemed to care. I needed a drink bad. I didn't understand why they didn't answer me. Fred said that Jack was always open to invasion by souls like himself. If people want to come, he doesn't try to stop them, just says, come on. And even though Fred was tempted to rim to a pleasant time in his childhood, a picnic with his mother, he vacillated. I think I need to stay here. Jack needs me. I help him. He's lonely, too. No, I assured him emphatically. With your loneliness in him, he is twice as lonely, and you are drinking through Jack's drinking. True? That is selfish of you. You are not helping him. Be brave. Go back to the time when you decided to change. That determination was good. Pretend that the alcohol addiction is a black chunk in your heart, and pull it right out, and the loneliness, too, and the feeling that nobody cares. You don't want him, do you? He shook his head. Your alcoholism made you 104, and everyone miserable. Just chuck it out of you, and that low self-image and all the other things you want to get rid of. Clean yourself up. After a long pause, Fred began to smile. You know what it looks like? When fog closes in on you, you feel awful. This is like a nice fog, not closing in, and you feel good, light. It's not in a city anymore. It's on a meadow where my mother and I had the picnic. You know who I'd like to see, don't you? I see someone, not my mother. I thought it was going to be my mother. I thought it might be, too, but this means she is still alive in her physical body. If you saw her, she'd be dead, like you, but you can visit her if you want to. I asked for a guide who cared about Fred to please come and FMD his mother with him, and I asked the mother's higher mind to be receptive as her son came to visit her. Fred's eyes filled with tears. She's sleeping. I think she knows I'm there. I suggested that he put a dream of himself into her sleeping mind and assured him that he could send her his love anytime. Then I committed him to the care of the guide and told him goodbye. Charlene, the channel, said there was no other entity in Jack but only a potential space, an empty, lonesome feeling that needed filling, but not by searching so hard for happiness. Perhaps the answer is to relax and accept, take the affection offered, not looking for ulterior motives. Be content with the love he does have, and fill the empty space with loving concern for others as well as for himself. Jack is still alone but is no longer drinking. He seems to have stabilized himself. With the aid of a canine friend and treatment to detoxify and rehabilitate himself. 105, Mary, the channel for this case, is an artist, talented also as a channel. One of our nurse friends asked us to do a remote releasement for one of her patients, Elle, whom she suspected of harboring an entity. After Mary had placed herself into hypnosis, I asked for protective light to surround us. Invited our spiritual advisors as I always do, and then asked that we be given an answer through Mary's fingers to the question, is it all right for us to do this work without the man's knowledge or consent? Yes, said Mary's finger, unequivocally. Therefore I called the strongest entity in hell and asked the name. Paul. I'm 36 years old. It is 1907. L was 17 or 18 when I entered him. He was in an accident and had a small concussion. It made him more open. I entered his mind. I didn't influence him so much as just strengthen what he had. I wasn't ready to quit when my time came. I have good drive. L had a lot of drive and ambition. I wanted to accomplish my unfinished things through him. I needed to fill up something empty in me. One needed to know I was a success. My small business wasn't enough for me. I had great plans. There was a big emptiness inside of me. You mentioned when my time came. Was it really your time, or was it a true accident? I chose it. I took my life. I was depressed, but it was a big mistake. I was in my place of business. Business had not been good. I couldn't take care of my wife Sally and my children as I wanted to, 3 children and another on the way. I can't accept that I'm a failure. Mary said afterward that she saw the wife when Paul was speaking, a haggard, worn-looking woman, rather unkempt. 106. I'm sitting at my desk with my head in my hand. I reach into a drawer, pull out a gun, aim it between my eyes, pull the trigger. What was your last thought? Sadness. I feel that this isn't the way, but I can't live with the failure. I'm just hanging over the body, drifting, looking around. I don't know what to do now. I feel an emptiness in me, a need to fill that great cavity in me. I make the decision that I must continue to try to fill this need. I'm attracted to this one, L. His needs are the same as mine, a great driving ambition to be a success, to fill the need inside. So I merge with this one. It's interesting that I'm not really fond of this one. No, and now you find yourself trapped in him and stopped in your own spiritual evolution. You said this was in 1907, and today it is 1987, 80 years that you have been stagnant, Paul. Did you think of your family as you pulled the trigger? Oh, yes, of course. I knew how they'd get along with me, and that was not good. So your act was not entirely selfish. But it was a mistake. So, Paul, push out of yourself that excessive ambition, that idea of earthly success. Had they made you become hard, self-centered, driving? Maybe in these was the reason for that emptiness. Were you always trying to get my will, my way? I was told that it was good. Put out your loneliness, the feeling of failure, the frustration, the hopelessness. I'm trying but they're not going. They're useful. Who is God? I don't know God. I don't know if what you say is right. Ask the bright beings here. The silver rule is, don't do to others what you don't want others to do to you. And the golden rule is even more beautiful, do to others what 107, you would like them to do for you. Do you understand? It brings you a different type of life. Just put out the anger, the envy, the jealousy. Ask the bright ones if all this is true. There was a briefer pause. They just smiled. Yes, yes, 772 ZR5 why I didn't succeed! Exclamation mark. I missed some happiness that was there for me. My sights were on the wrong goals. He took a deep breath. I feel there's something inside that's better, light as a feather, but... Doc put out the emptiness, too, I reminded him, and let light fill the place where it was. Now do you feel lighter? MHM. Paul, I'm so glad. You'll be leaving L. Are there any others in him? Minor troublemakers that come and go. His own darker nature attracts them, he's vulnerable all the time. He could use some help. Should we do more for L, today? The fingers said no. Then, Paul, hold out your hand. I think someone will be coming to meet you. Oh, yes, it's Sally. She's young again and fresh. I said goodbye to Paul and his wife. Then I returned to L. asking if there were any more instructions concerning him. The channel answered, "Surround him with light. Golden light is best. Have all in the group send positive thoughts. That will bring results. He'll resist overt actions. Have the nurse record any changes, this will give all of you faith. You'll be amazed. There's no need for anyone to go through life negatively. It's always okay to send positive thoughts to others." "Is it Mary's higher mind speaking?" I asked. "It came from above," replied Mary. So Paul, with his suicidal despair, was gone from L. But L still had his own darker traits to deal with. And our nurse friend has a clearer idea of how to deal with them. Tim Tim, a Vietnam veteran, was in another city when we did this work for him. He had given permission for a woman relative to go into hypnosis and channel for the entities that he felt were in him. At this session, his grandmother was also present. Tim had many troubles with alcohol, drugs, rages, and totally irresponsible behavior. 5 entities were released from him in this session, with one or more still remaining at that date. 3 of the 5 released were a trio of Puerto Rican youths who had died in a gang fight in New York. They were mean ones, sullen and uncooperative. After much persuasion, explanation, and finally an ultimatum from us either to go on up to a higher state of learning or else each one would go alone to a visualized room described as being lined with mirrors where there would be no companions, they held a long confrontation among themselves, one or two choosing to go up, the leader stubbornly refusing to do so. Finally, almost to my astonishment, they all decided to go up to a higher life. This is a very brief report of what was almost an hour-long argument among the 4 of us. The 4th entity gave his name as John and said he had been killed at 21 in Vietnam by an explosion. He said he entered Tim because he was just there. He kept sighing deeply because he was just sat 21, the death everywhere, the screaming, fire everywhere, and I'm angry, at everything. I felt pain, fear, disgust, hatred toward the government. He said he didn't hate the Vietnamese. They are just people. He insisted that before the government sent him to Vietnam he had been a different sort of guy, just happy. He had friends. 109. I asked how he had changed. "They changed you," he snapped harshly. "Yes. Do you want to change back?" That set him off. He began shouting, yelling, I can't not after all that. I can't change back. Don't you understand? You aren't there. You don't understand. You can't. Nobody can. Ever." Through the channel's body he thrashed, screamed, and wept, pounding the cot. I let him weep a while and then interrupted softly, "John, in World War II people were asked to give their dogs to the army to help out in the war effort. These pets and house dogs were trained by the army to be killers. After the war the dogs were given back to their owners, but they were still killers. There were many accidents, and some dogs had to be destroyed. The families protested so loudly that the army promised to rehabilitate the dogs, to untrain them as killers and retrain them to be pets before sending them back. Then the dogs were no longer killers." What one elderly World War I veteran told me is what I have felt, myself, for many years. The service needs to be sure that its veterans are untrained from being the killers it trained them to be, before discharging them back into civilian life again. The Army, Navy, and Air Force need to see that men are rehabilitated as well as dogs. This old veteran said that his entire life had been affected by the military experiences. He still had nightmares of the war, even from 1918 when he was a teenager. "Some of us civilians do understand more than you veterans may think, John. The relatives of men in the field suffer, wives and mothers and sweethearts suffer even if they are not there. Civilian doctors know, too, John. We read the terrible accounts of war casualties in the medical journals, we see the photos." 110. John put his hand to his forehead. "My head hurts." I placed my hand on his forehead and continued to talk softly, visualizing aloud that his pain, hate, rage, etc. are coming into my hand, up my arm to my elbow, then into the air and out through the window, dissipating harmlessly in the outside air and not bothering any living thing. He became quieter. I asked that calmness, strength, and peacefulness come into him, and become continually stronger as I remove my hand. I am drawing out all the rest of the negatives like helplessness, rage, hate, pain. Is there anything else you'd like to say, John? His lips moved. War, he murmured, / R must never happen again. Son, I know. You want to stop war, and you can't. I can't, either, John. We are not God. But you are one, and I am one, and there are hundreds of thousands of us working against war. We each do what we can and just have to leave the rest to the higher powers, praying that they may penetrate the self-centered minds of those who profit from and perpetuate war. Do you think you can do this, John, and go on now to the place of learning and become wiser and stronger so that you can do more when you come back in your next life? And live longer in your next life? I'll try, he whispered. He was very quiet. Soon he saw his deceased grandmother coming toward him. She's holding out her hands and smiling. He went toward her and took her hand. I bade him goodbye with my blessing and they went together into the light. After the lady channeling for Tim's entities returned to still consciousness, she told me that John was the name of a fellow soldier Tim had mentioned as having had bitter rages in Vyman. He had finally pulled the pin of a hand grenade and had blown up both his superior officer and himself. Evidently he had been driven into frank insanity before death. Ill, Tim's living grandmother had sat in on this session and afterwards said, "That was Timmy, pounding his hand like that. He used to say, he made me do it. That whole scene was just the way Timmy is." No, I corrected, I think Tim was right, it was John in him who made Tim do it. As soon as John was safe, I asked the fifth entity in Tim to come out. This was Andrew, whose name I had learned from a previous entity. Andrew did not want to talk. He closed his lips tidy, thrusting out his lower lip. I chuckled. It is often best to tease and jolly an entity out of its mood, if possible. I think you are going to be one of those stubborn ones, are you? No answer. Are you a little kid? How old are you? Still no answer. Come on, honey, tell me. No answer. You're a little fellow, right? Sullenly Andrew said, I'm 18. Then he refused to answer several more questions. Needling him a little on purpose, I hinted, are you mentally a little bit retarded? No. I'm not retarded. I'm smart. What caused your death? Andrew, tell me. He said it was drugs, heroin, anything I could get. It was in the war, Vietnam. He had known both John and Tim, friends of his. He admitted that he still craved drugs and tried to make Tim get drugs so that he could feel their effects through Tim. Tim, however, was fighting against the drugs except for liquor. If Tim is your friend and you are trying to force him to get drugs, that's not very nice of you. I don't care. He put his hand to his head. What's the matter, Andrew? Are you craving drugs right now, son? I placed my hand on his forehead, as I had for John, a touch technique that I seldom used at that time, and 112, kept on talking, using imageries as for John, that all craving and addictions are coming out of your head, out of your mind, out of your brain cells, into my hand. Let it all trickle out of you into my hand, all anger and craving and anything else you want to get rid of, and so on. They will go out of my hand and vaporize outdoors as a harmless mist. He became quieter, his breathing calmer. In a little while he saw someone coming for him. It looks like an angel. I wished him a happy journey into the light and said goodbye. Addictions of most kinds, whether emotional or physiological, are seldom controllable through conscious mind, willpower and determination alone. It is true that a few people can succeed by these means. For most, however, even addicts of coffee, cigarettes, or sweets, the cooperation of the subconscious mind is required. For drug addicts in the agonies of craving, It seems that every cell in the body is screaming for the drug. It is a condition that needs understanding and help from those not addicted, not mere self-righteous admonitions. The 12-step programs have helped innumerable unhappy addicts. Releasing any obsessing entities who are drug addicted helps, although Tim in this case probably needs more assistance. As mentioned, one or more entities still remain in him. He still has problems with alcoholism and irresponsibility, whether because of the entrapped entities or not, we do not yet know. My guess is that one of the entities remaining is alcoholic and one is a very young child. Erin, an excellent example of a false memory due to an attached entity, is reported by Scott Herner of Scandia, Minnesota, in 113, Dr. Irene Hickman's book, Remote Depossession, pp. 81, 82, with her permission I quote it here. The case is that of a little girl, Erin, who until the age of about 5 had been very pleasant, bright, happy, always getting along well with her sisters. She had at about 5 begun to talk of having been abused but could recall no details of actual abuse. At age 7, Erin developed headaches located from the top of her head and down the left side. The changed pattern of behavior included vehement non-cooperation, obnoxiousness, being annoying and mean to her younger sister, even to hitting her frequently. Scott Herner, the therapist, with an associate as channel for the remote work, located 3 attached entities in Erin, one of them the cause of her headaches and left side pain and her abhorrent behavior. It was this first entity who named the other 2, the last being a small boy, Joe, who refused to go with the others to the light. Joe petulantly stated that he wasn't going anywhere. Further questioning brought the response that he had been very badly abused even while very young and had been beaten to death when he was 4. He commented that he didn't think it was fair to die at such a young age. He had joined Erin when she was about 5. Scott, the therapist, told Joe about the light and that he could have his own body there. When the call was made for anyone in the light to come for Joe, Grandma Annie came. Then Joe was willing to go. Erin's body was even visualized, filled and surrounded with light. The very next morning Erin was a changed child. She even told her mother that she felt different. She is much happier and quieter. This 114 report was sent about 5 weeks after the Depossis sign. During these 5 weeks the new attitude and behavior had continued. She gets along well with her sisters with no hitting. Her aunt also remarked about the marked change in Erin. The most significant part of this, I feel, adds Dr. Hickman, is that Joe, who had been abused and beaten to death at 4, had joined Erin when she was 5. Erin began at that time to talk of being abused herself, without being able to come up with any pertinent details. This raises the question as to whether children may have felt abused because of an attached entity rather than from their own personal abuse. Could this be a reason for what has been called false memory syndrome? Emphasis mine. The mind of a living person may become an obsessing entity. Report was sent about 5 weeks after the Depossis sign. During these 5 weeks the new attitude and behavior had continued. She gets along well with her sisters with no hitting. Her aunt also remarked about the marked change in Erin. The most significant part of this, I feel, adds Dr. Hickman, is that Joe, who had been abused and beaten to death at 4, had joined Erin when she was 5. Erin began at that time to talk of being abused herself, without being able to come up with any pertinent details. This raises the question as to whether children may have felt abused because of an attached entity rather than from their own personal abuse. Could this be a reason for what has been called false memory syndrome? Emphasis mine. The mind of a living person may become an obsessing entity. One of the cases Baldwin mentions is one in which the entity within his client was the mind of a little girl living in a distant city. She said, through the client, that she had come, while her body was sleeping, to be in this woman who was supposed to have been her mother. The child's mind would return to her own child body when the period of sleep was over. The client had had herself sterilized after 2 children because, being angry at her husband, She did not want a third child. The soul of the third child, thwarted in getting the mother it had chosen, accepted a different mother and was born to this second choice woman, but during sleep the child was astrally visiting the woman she had wanted, her first choice for mother.